my lucky, 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 my lucky.
You're listening to Hackery Radio, hosted by the White Rabbit, brought to you live from Helsinki, Finland.
In today's show, should hackers be for hire? Blog ethics, and Nokia's near-field communication protocol on their new phone covers, plus our usual pub quiz and email readouts.
Hello, listeners! So, this is the first show that I've done in a while, actually, because I've been sick. So thanks for all your wishes to get well and blah blah blah, which I didn't have any, as if I just fell off the planet, nobody seemed to care, but anyhow, when I become uber famous and stuff like that, then maybe people would care if I'm dying or die or not of some illness or something. But I'm back. So, first of all, I'd like to read out some emails I've been receiving. The first one was from somebody called Al Hamoha. He says, I appreciate his offer, by the way. He says, highly confidential, I am Al Haji Mohammed Abacha, the son of a late Nigerian head of state who died on the 8th of June 1998 while in active services. Following the sudden death of my father, General Sani Abacha, the present civilian government has thrown my family and I into a state of utter confusion, frustration and hopelessness. I have been subjected to inhuman physical and psychological torture, incarceration by the security agents of my country. I was only recently released from detention after being arraigned before the Federal High Court of Nigeria for an offence committed by my late father. Well, that really does suck, doesn't it, really? But anyhow, I'll continue with the email. The incumbent civilian administration of Chief Olusegun Obasanjo has intensified his probe into my late father's activities while in the office and has frozen all our local and foreign accounts together, with other assets of my family in his is as a retaliation. Blah, blah, blah. Let me get this back again. These are long words, man. Okay, together with other assets of my family as a retaliation for what my late father did to him when he was alive as the head of the military regime in Nigeria. As a matter of fact, we have been declared bankrupt and they are not relenting to make us poor for life. Well, that sort of really sucks. Usually is the tax man, but damn, you got a real guy on your head, you know, on your hands here. As a man that is so traumatized, I have lost confidence that anybody within my country, as all those who benefited immensely during the regime of my late father, have openly abandoned all my family. My reasons for contacting you. I got your contacts through my personal research. Damn you, where did I leave that account details? All out of desperation, decided to reach you through this medium. You must have heard over the media reports and other internet on the recovery of various huge sums of money deposited by my late father in different banks and security firms abroad. No, but anyhow. Some of these banks and security firms willingly give up, divulge their banking secrets and disclose at the present civilian administration court of Chief Olusegun Obasanjo all my family's cash lodgement and monetary transactions to them. Please, my dear, damn, that's a bit faggoty gay, you know what I'm saying? I repose grateful confidence in you and I hope you will not betray my confidence in you. I don't even know you, dude. I have secretly deposited the sum of 20... Is that a telephone number? 20 million billion dollars. I hope that's American, not Canadian. Sorry about those Canadians listening, but hey, your exchange rate sucks. With a security firm abroad, whose name is withheld for now until we open communications. The money is contained in a metal box consignment with security deposit number. Well, that's really cool. What does the money look like, man? I shall be grateful if you could receive this fund into your bank account for safekeeping. This arrangement is known to you and my junior brother, Abbas, only. So I will deal directly with you. I am proposing a 20% share of the fund to you for your kind assistance. I shall provide for you all the documents of the fund deposit with the security firm and raise a power of attorney to enable you claim and receive this fund into your bank account. That's nice of you. Also, this transaction demands absolute confidentiality. I didn't realize that. I just read it on the radio show. I'm sure you won't mind anyway. On no condition must you disclose it to anybody irrespective of your relation with the person. Remember, loose lips sinks ship. Okay, so I think I've really fucked it up now, haven't I, really? I just read it out to God knows how many people. But anyhow, don't tell anybody, okay? I am looking forward to your urgent and positive response via my email above. Sincerely, Al-Haji Mohammed Abacha. Okay. Do you think he would mind that I just read it out on the internet radio? Anyhow, thanks for your email. Al-Haji Mohammed Abacha. I appreciate it. And, yep, I don't know what to say, really. If I could have some money for free, I'll reply back to you. And, yeah, sounds good. You want to give me $20 million? That sounds great. Tell me what I have to do, man. That sounds wonderful. So, and next email, then. The next email. Oh, yeah, I got a great from Claudia Fowler. She's got a lot of typos in her email. It makes no sense at all. It's subject, see. It says, hello. And then, she made no move until she read on the morning of the 10th that deal. However, these would be sold again. The court law concerning was grieved and was hoping some young man would eventually appear more angular. Her face was hollow-cheeked, like so many of being exposed and possibly punished. Now, where, I ask you, did you get? Time the price had to fall every day was bringing its special war between France and Turkey, famine in Russia or Ireland, and his hands behind his back. But for heaven's sake, be quick about stocks that you could never explain at all. No one could. It. Have a nice day. Okay, thanks for your email, but I just don't get it. Sorry, I have no idea what you're talking about. So, Claudia, try again later. Okay, I don't know what to say. I read it out. I said I would. I read it out, but I don't know what it means. I don't know what you're asking here. And then we've had one sensible response, actually. This is in response to the pub quiz I gave the last show. And Zombie 5 has the most correct answers. I received a couple, but Zombie 5, you know who you are. You got the most correct answers. And the answers are, to the question, what was the name of the first mobile virus? Hint, Bluetooth was its infection method. The answer was Kabir. Number two, what's the current version number of Windows as of today, i.e. the service pack? It's service pack 4. You can go to www.microsoft.com and you can see all about it. And that's for Windows 2000. I didn't mention that before, but depends on what version of Windows you're using as well, I suppose. So it's a little bit of a dumbass question. I should have made it more specific. What's the current kernel version of Fedora Linux as of today? As far as I know, at least on my system, it's kernel 2.6.11-1.1185. As far as I know, that's the most up-to-date version that's on the Fedora website. So that's it. What's the general numeric term to describe the Wi-Fi standard? The answer is 802.11. A lot of people got that one right. And then there's a tricky question at the end that I put in. What was the last DEF CON conference, or when was it? DEF CON 12. And this is over a period, I think, of a couple of days. It's July 30th to the 1st of August. But it's already gone, so hopefully I didn't go there, but hopefully everyone who did go had a great time and stuff like that, so I'm sure it's unforgettable, those dates, for the people who went. So, That was the emails read out that I wanted to cover for today. The next Tuesday Sunday meeting is on the 1st, I believe, the 1st of March. 1st of March. Friday, 1st of March in Helsinki. It'll be good if we can have some members turn up. We got a good response last time, and it'd be good if we can get some more people coming along today also. And shouts out to Otto. You know who you are. You're a regular attendee. And I said I would say hello and, you know, greets, as they say. Now, my first discussion for today is, should hackers be for hire? This is like a debate that I like to have, but it's quite hard to have a debate by yourself. So I have to try and be on both sides of the courtroom, you could say. Like, should a hacker be for hire? The positive parts of it is, yeah, of course. It's like, the best way to protect your system is by somebody who knows the techniques how to break into your system. But then the flip side of the coin is, can you trust a hacker? What are their ulterior motives? It's a real debate out there. It's like, I don't know. You know, I'm not a hacker. I'm security dude sort of thing. Actually, I'm a hacker, fuck it. I'm a white hat hacker. Because I try to fix stuff. I don't try and break stuff, I try to fix stuff. If I see there's an exploit, I tell as many people as possible. And that's not really black hattery, is it? Black hat hackery, like. You know, because, you know, black hats, they keep it to themselves and exploit and cause havoc and destroy everything and take satellites out of orbit and big blackouts in parts of the world and launch nuclear weapons and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I don't know. Should hackers be for hire? Yeah, why not? Why not give some, you know, give some love and some money to the, you know, to these computer geek nerd types of people who never get out and have really pale skin and, you know, big fat bellies and drink lots of Coca-Cola. So, yeah, I say why not? But then, you know, why would you not want to hire a hacker? Like, if a hacker's got a lot of media exposure because they've been prosecuted and they've actually gone to jail, been convicted, it means that they have broke the law. They're a criminal. Can you trust them in your organization? Or does it mean that you can employ them, but not for as much money? Because you don't have other employees that are in your company, probably, that haven't done anything wrong ever in their entire lives. These are like, you know, they're white-collar workers, never had a parking ticket, speeding, fine, nothing. These guys, you know, and girls are like super Teflon smooth, like, you know, they've just never been in trouble. And how do you think they would react if they knew that one of the employees is like, you know, quote, a celebrity hacker that's been convicted, people know about him, he's, you know, he's got a presence, stuff like that. How would they feel working alongside this guy? Would they trust him? Would it make them act a bit differently around him or her? Because hackers could be girls too, as you know that, you know, not a sexist sort of, like, you know, community. So, yeah, it makes you, you know, it's a deeper question, I think, then, isn't it? Should hackers be for hire? You know, I suppose, it depends on the hacker. If he can talk the talk and, you know, can sell himself really well, then why not? You know, or is it going to be the advertising campaign of the company who's hiring you that, yep, they're a great company because they've got this celebrity hacker in their organization now? But would that celebrity hacker be given the access to all of the data that he requires? Or will he be, like, the management keep tabs on him by looking over his shoulder, checking what he's doing, all that sort of stuff? Or will they instantly make him some sort of important manager or management type, and then just trust him explicitly with all of the business of the company and all of the financial records and everything, and hope that he just doesn't, like, basically become a criminal, which he's been convicted for anyway, and, you know, and go run away with them. So it's an interesting, you know, question, really. Should hackers be for hire? It's moralistic implications and work ethic implications, because a lot of companies, especially big organizations, have a policy that if you have a criminal record, then they just won't hire you. But I suppose they make exceptions if they hire you because it makes sense for the company. You know, they can get something out of it. If they're a security company and they've got 3 or 4 employees that work for them that have been convicted hackers and they're offering penetration testing, maybe it's a good gimmick for them. But, you know, would you want to, you know, employ a company to audit your computer system, which is like, you know, your core business, and you know that a lot of the employees of that company are, you know, convicted felons? So it makes you think that, you know, should hackers be for hire? Do you only hire hackers who have been convicted? Or do you give them a little test and then you can call them a hacker inside your organization? Or is it just going to be somebody who's interested in security? So I think that this, you know, it's a very interesting topic, and I'd like to get some feedback so I can talk about it next time as well on this. And, you know, it's very
blog.
And a lot of the stuff that I read out actually is on the blog as well. I'm just going into more detail verbally than, you know, writing it down on the blog every day, because I am a busy guy. I have got a day job, and I can't update my blog every 10 minutes like some people I know. They've got a day job, but they don't do so much in the day, so they can write basically, you know, throughout the day they can update their blogs and reply to comments and stuff like that. But I don't have that ability. So I actually use a blog from B2, this cafe B2 blogging utility. And this enables me to write blogs when I do have time and to schedule them with a calendar and a time event when they would actually be posted or blogged. So I could write basically a whole week's worth of blog on a Sunday or a Saturday when I have time, and it will be posting then every day for the following week, for the following weekdays, one per day. So as far as I know, most blog applications have this facility. I know a lot of people don't really appreciate blogs, but in this world of information technology and, you know, the information media is so easy to get, I think a blog is an important way that people can get their views, they can express their views. I'm sure most people who write their blogs don't even care if anybody reads it. They just want to write it down, stick it on there, they've done the thing. It's like a weight off their shoulders. It's like a confession of the sin or whatever, or of your, you know, of the soul. You're just writing down in a diary and you're just sticking it up there. I'm sure that most bloggers don't really care how many people are reading their blog, but they really don't want to hear people giving negative comment about their blog. I know a lot of people that, you know, that they don't like to have negative comments, but that's the whole point of a blog. If it's got comment sections, you've got to let people put whatever comment they like there. So if it's positive or negative, I use the blog on my site as a debate forum, you could say. I put something that I think is quite, you know, interesting, and then it's up to the people who comment to comment whether they did or not think it was interesting, and then the following comments are comments about the comments. So it goes into like a cascade, actually makes something worth reading. I was also thinking about, like Kizzle's done with the hackermedia.net website, of giving people some accounts to write to my blog, because he's using a blogging utility to write to the site. So I was thinking doing that so other people would be able to write on the blog for 2600.fi subjects which interest them. And it's up to other people to comment if they want to. If nobody comments, then fine. Next day you get to write something else. So if anybody would like to write for a blog about security issues or hacker issues, then feel free, send me an email at radio@2600.fi, and I will create you an account, and we can see how it works from there. If it becomes a disaster and it gets completely fucked up immediately, then I will, you know, I will revoke all the rights for everybody. So it's going to be self-managed. If it's treated correctly, then it'll be there. If it's abused, then I will take it away. So, but that's going to be like the blog ethics, because I'm sure there's a lot of ethics out there, because there's at the moment this, what's it called? the Blog Awards. And this is where you can submit your blog to a committee forum, and they will analyze your blog for content, issues, amount of visitors, comment structure, you know, topic structures, stuff like that. And then there will come at the, you know, there will be an award given to the blog with the most hits. On the BBC website, news.bbc.co.uk, a couple of days ago, there was an article about the blog awards on there, actually. And it was, I think it was called Blog Blog or something like that, was the one that got the most awards or something given to it. But, you know, it's here, people like to say stuff, so, you know, it's just another type of authoring for the web. Rather than having to do it in HTML, you could just type your blog into a simple utility, post it, and that's it, done. It's just another type of web, you know, web GUI. So people say, oh, I don't like blogs. It's like, well, do you like surfing the internet? You know, if you don't like reading on the internet, like websites, then, you know, I can understand why you don't like a blog. But if you like surfing the internet and finding stuff, then that's what blogs are about. Just people and their views, it does, you know, the content's what makes it, like, good or bad. And if you haven't found a blog of your own that you like, then make one. Don't diss, you know, people and say, oh, yeah, all blogging sucks, I hate blogging, yeah, it's the sucks of the world. Well, do something about it, you know. It's up to the individual if they want to blog or not, or whatever. And I don't think, you know, as part of the 2600, it's not our right, or, you know, what we want to will people to tell them what they can and can't do. It's up to the right of the individual to what they can and can't do. So if they want to blog, let them blog. I don't have to read it. I am in total 100% control of my URL, like, bar that I enter into my address that I enter into my URL bar in my internet browser. So if I don't want to visit a blog, I just don't click on the link. Whether somebody else does it, it's their thing. There's a lot of people out there, millions and billions of people, that actually do like them, and they do read them regularly. So that's my little thing. I think I've run a little bit off topic then. The topic was blog ethics, but I went a little bit too philosophical rather than ethical. But anyhow, you know, but if you have any comments, then like I said, email me at radio@2600.fi. And the last thing I want to mention, actually, is Nokia has a great new technology which I've been reading about called NFC. This is Near Field Communication. It's a technology from Nokia. I'm going to put a link on the posting when I actually do post it, and also on the on 2600.fi website also. Basically what it's about is that it's a bit like RFID tags. You don't have to touch a pad. If you want to, say, these bus cards, these Helsinki bus cards, which I've been talking about before, you have to, it's a magnetic card, and you swipe it in front of the reader, and you don't have to touch it, but it reads it, and, you know, you can get onto the bus. You can also do it now with a Nokia phone cover, this near-field communication. And it works with, like, some sort of signal, a radio signal, from actually built into the radio, to the phone cover. It's not actually on the phone, it's in the cover itself. So there'd be much more phone models, I'm sure, from different manufacturers that'd be able to use this technology also. And then it's updated somehow with maybe a little plug or something, so you can update the data on it, so you can have applications on the telephone interacting with the near-field communication sensors, or, you know, transmitters that are actually in the cover. But on the website, it's really, you know, really interesting. It says it's for very short-range two-way wireless connectivity. So they actually connect them together, a bit like Bluetooth, but it's for very short range. So whereas Bluetooth's got a range, I think it's something like 10 meters, this has a very short range of only maybe less than less than half a meter or something. And it's a short range radio frequency. It's an RF frequency technology, and it allows a reader to read a small amount of data. It doesn't say on the Nokia website how much data can be in it, but I suppose that depends on the device, you know, the hardware size and memory capacities and stuff like that, how much power it's got in it and things like that. but the amount of data from other devices or tags when brought next to each other transmitted is quite small at the moment, and in Nokia's solution, the reading distance is only a few centimeters, so I thought it was a couple, no, half a meter.
Touch-based interactions offer mobile phone users an intuitive and easy way to connect, collect, and share with mobile devices. So, how does the NFC work? NFC is based on contactless and radio frequency identification solutions, which consist of a tag and a reader. I'd assume that in the Nokia telephones on the shells or the cases for the mobile telephones, it'd be the reader and the tag would be, you know, actually part of the, you know, on the inside of the cover or something, and somehow they'll be plugged to the actual main part of the telephone. But anyhow, the reader, when activated, emits a short-range radio signal for a few centimeters, and powers up a microchip on the tag, which is what you're sending it to, and allows the reading of a small amount of data that can be stored on the tag. Oh yeah. So what it's saying then is that you've got the reader, which is part of the shell of the telephone, and the RFID tag would be what's in a shop or, you know, as part of your telephone, as part of your bus card or bus pass or something like that. NFC is different from other contactless or RFID technologies in that it has a very short operating distance and also allows two devices to interconnect. So it's both ways that, you know, you can talk to each other and, you can talk to each other, but, you know, interact with each other. And the effective distance of an RFC solution depends on the tag design and the reader, but it's only a few centimeters in Nokia's solution here in Finland. So about the RFC, with an RFC-enabled device, mobile device, its users can easily access services or operate his or her device functions, i.e. different connectivity options. So you can, you know, you can connect, you know, just put your telephone on the table, and as long as there's some other tag or reader on the table, you don't have to actually use any cable, it's a bit like Bluetooth, but you have to actually put it down onto the pad or something. The user just needs to touch a tag or share information or an object by bringing two devices close to each other. So when the user touches the tag, his or her device reads the content of the tag and executes it into actions. The user only accepts the execution, e.g. opening a web page or calling a favorite number or sending an SMS. Similarly, by touching an enabled device such as a TV, a mobile device can send a picture to it simply as a result of a touch. So I don't know, from a hacker's perspective, this sounds very interesting, because it could be that there'll be a lot of mobile devices which could be prone to an attack from a virus or something now, because there's a, you know, you just have to touch them. So if you're in a train station, you just touch somebody and, you know, you could have copied the list of, you know, of contact details from them, or use their mobile telephone to send text messages or something, just a spam wars with text messages. But this is all, you know, just, you know, without actually looking at the product or anything, just, you know, speculation. But the benefits should be improved usability and a better user experience, easy access to services and content from physical objects, convenient sharing of digital items between devices by bringing them next to each other, and local payment and ticketing capabilities. So that was all read from the Nokia website. So that. Okay, now on to... what's the time now?
It's pop quiz time! So, the questions are... Question number one. What does NFC stand for? If you don't know, you have to listen to the show again. Question number two. How many keys are on a standard Finnish keyboard? Question number three. How many players at one time using one Xbox machine can play Xbox's Halo 2 game?
Question number 4. How many pages are in the Kevin Mitnick book, The Art of Deception? I mean all pages for the entire book. And this is a fun question, which is totally non-geek. What is the date of the Eurovision Song Contest in Europe? Okay, if you think you know the answers, send me an email to radio@2600.fi and I will read the correct answers out the next show, as well as the winner. Okay, so if you want to be on the show, like I said before, drop me a line, because I'd like to get some more participants as well. And also, if you would like to write on the blog, send me an email. And also, keep safe, people. And I'll leave you with a Eurovision, or should I say, a Euro song called Dragostea Din De. Bye for now.
Și sunt voinic, dar să știi, nu-ți cer nimic.
Vrei să pleci, dar numai ei.
Să-ți spun ce simt acum. Alo, iubirea mea, sunt eu, fericirea.
Alo, alo, sunt iarăși eu, Picasso, ți-am dat vii. Ce sunt voinic, dar să știi, nu-ți cer nimic.
Vrei să pleci, dar numai ei. Numai ei. Numai ei. Chipul tău și dragostea din tăi. Ne-amintesc de ochii tăi. Vrei să pleci, dar numai ei. Numai ei. Numai ei. Chipul tău și dragostea din tăi. Ne-amintesc de ochii tăi.
My